Hi guys, so today I am talking to Neil Kennett. Now, Neil Kennett's a former journalist, but he's also the founder of Cars of the Future. And it's quite interesting that we're chatting today, because today being the 60th anniversary of the Time Lord himself, Doctor Who. So today we are going to both be jumping onto the TARDIS, and we're going to be taking a journey into the future to see what motoring will be like, say, in the year 2030, 2040, 2050, or even beyond. But before we do that, let's welcome Neil. Neil, how you doing? And how, you know, you just came off the back of your inaugural awards. What was that like?
We did, indeed. I'll be very, very happy to talk about the inaugural self-driving industry awards, but I can't let a Doctor Who reference slip. Absolutely love Doctor Who.
Who was your favourite Doctor?
Oh, well, I'm Tom Baker years, really. And yes. I also go into Peter Davison, although he gets a bit of a bad rep. Yeah. I quite enjoyed the Davison. Yeah. Look, Castrovalva, the episode, the end of Tom Baker into Peter Davison is absolutely extraordinary. I also heard on the radio this morning, it is 60 years since The Kinks as well. So look, if we're talking top of the shop stuff, Doctor Who you can have, and I'd put The Kinks in the same category. That this is all pretty good.
There you go. that just fits perfectly, doesn't it? I have a soft spot for Pertwee as well, John Pertwee.
I always
liked his very flamboyant, very stylish Doctor. And he had some cool cars as well. Did he? He had the Whomobile.
And then more recently, you have to look out. I'm David Tennant, who's back now, I think most people agree. Yeah. Since the reboot, he is the Doctor, isn't he?
No, he is. He's definitely. I can't wait. I think they're coming out this Saturday. The three specials that he's doing. I think. Yeah. I can't wait to see them.
They found a way. The brilliance of Doctor Who is that you can literally be in any time and place. So any storyline is open to you, and they found a way to bring him back. So yeah, really, really looking forward to
Absolutely. No, this is one of the reasons why I love science fiction, because you can just imagine entire worlds, entire, you know, time zones, entire parallel universes, and you can break all the rules. And I just love it. You know, one of my favorite books ever that I remember reading as a kid was Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Right. Yeah.
Because it was just so absurd and so much fun, you know.
Yes.
And yet there were so many ideas.
The films don't do it justice, I'm afraid. You have to go back to the books.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely brilliant. But no, this is the thing. So we have the opportunity to imagine a future. And I think that science fiction and shows like, obviously, Star Trek, which I'm a big fan of, and Doctor Who, and these things have allowed us to do that. But you're grappling with the future on a daily basis. But let's touch on the awards. How did it all go?
The awards were absolutely amazing. So a bit about them. So I love cars. I love driving. But I really like either really old stuff, like really classic stuff, or the really, really cutting edge stuff as well. So particularly connected and automated mobility, self-driving, they call it. Some people still use the term driverless. I've never really liked it, because it's defining something by what it's not, which I prefer the new self-driving term. Hence the
I've got to say I've always got a little bit confused about the self-driving, the driver, you know, because self-driving, you know, like when you used to rent a car and you'd rent it as a self-driver,
that means
that you drive the car.
You know
what I mean? So I'm always like, is that the right term? I've always sort of struggled with that a little bit.
There is terminology issues. So over even the last 10 years, I think we've moved from sort of driverless and autonomous. Now the A has shifted from autonomous to automated. And it's different around the world as well. So in America, they've got a phrase called driver out, which I'm not particularly, I don't think it's a very sort of nice way of selling it, but maybe it's quite accurate. Whereas over here, we've very much gone for self-driving, hence the inaugural self-driving industry awards, which took place here, the home of Cars of the Future, my hometown in Margate in Kent. And people came from far and wide. We had people flying in from around the world, and some great UK people, And the headline vehicle of the year, you might have seen, was the Cav4th bus. So this has been running for 6 months now in Scotland, across the Forth Road Bridge. And it is just a, dare I say, a normal bus, single-decker, Alexander Dennis bus, eco-friendly as they can make it at the moment, operated by Stagecoach, and it's route AB1, and people can just put their hand out and jump on it. But the thing about it, it's got a load of additional tech, including some amazing software by Fusion Processing, and it operates with a safety driver. So the safety driver is there, sort of ready to take the wheel should anything happen. And they've got a captain who goes around the bus explaining to people. But apart from the livery, which says autonomous down the side, you wouldn't really know the difference. And this is reality. So we're not talking science fiction anymore. This is up and running in the UK. And then just, was it 2 weeks ago in the King's Speech, where there was specific reference to self-driving to lay the groundwork for legislation. So sort of legal self-driving in the UK, I think, within the next couple of years, and it absolute game changer.
I think let's bridge the gap a little bit between, you know, your awards and what we're ostensibly talking about today, because it's the interesting thing about, you know, call it self-driving, call it autonomous, whatever people want to refer to it as. But literally, if you had asked me, say, 2-3 months ago, if I thought we would have self-driving cars very soon, and I would, and I used to say to people, I said, nah, not for another decade at least.
Right.
Nah, no chance, you know.
Okay.
You know, that was my, you know, because I've driven cars at, you know, what is it, level one, level two, level three. I have driven them, and I have been in a fully autonomous car as well. In went to Honda in Japan many years ago, and it drove us around and stuff like that. But realistically, I always thought, oh no, cars are not just, they're just not going to be smart enough to handle the reality of day-to-day driving. But with what's happened recently with AI over just the last 6-7 months, the way that's just suddenly exploded.
Yeah.
I have to say, I've started to realign my thinking about that.
Yeah. I made the similar leap. So I'm motoring journalist, still am when I get time. And that's how I got into this. So I was writing more and more about ADAS, driver assistance systems, and I was on a test day at Thatcham Research, and it was the first time that I was in a car that had automated braking, and they had one of those orange bubble cars, and the sort of instructor next to me was just let it do it. Don't, and it's so counterintuitive, because every piece of you as a driver is like, I want to press the brake pedal. It's like, look, you've got to let it do it. And it did. And that was a real light bulb moment for me. And I was like, right, it's not such a leap now. Like that has done it, and it's done it quite well. So what is it going to be doing in 10 or 15 years time? And that's when I started to really sort of start investigating self-driving. Just a massively important safety message we've got to get in right at the start, particularly in terms of privately owned cars, is to differentiate driver assistance from self-driving. Some of these sort of higher levels, up to, you talked about the SAE levels, level zero or one is practically no automation. Level two is a bit, which such stuff like automated braking. Level three is really tricky because it's somewhere in the middle. And then number four is it can drive itself within a specific domain, within a certain geographical area. And then level five is it can self-drive all the time anywhere. But level three is really, really tricky. And I've got to say, I don't like it. I think you have to be so clear. Yeah. Either a car is driving itself, and you have no responsibility for the driving task, or it isn't, and you have to be so clear about that. That is the most important safety message.
You know, Neil, I'm glad that you brought that up, because I have a very similar worry as well. Because obviously, you know, we live in the world of social media, we live in the world of influencers, you know. And every time I see an influencer that's managed, that's bought themselves, say, a Tesla Model S or whatever.
Oh, well, you said them, the T word.
You see them make the top of a video sitting in the back of the car and the car driving around. And they're sort of telling everybody, I've just bought this car, it's wicked, and look, it drives itself. Yep. And I'm absolutely horrified because I'm like, that is just the wrong message to be putting out. You know?
Yeah, well, car, well, look, I'll be very, very clear on this. I think we're going to come on to talk about other sort of cutting edge tech as well. Take my hat off to Elon Musk and what he has done for electric.
Yeah.
Absolutely astonishing. But I've been quite vocal in criticizing him about the name of the full self-driving package, because it doesn't do what it says on the tin, and he's getting a ton of flack for it in America and over here. I think the EU is starting to look at some legal rules around marketing and being very, very clear about the capability of the vehicle, and I think it's a mistake. The whole branding of that package is a mistake, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think I find it very scary because, you know, I've had conversations with people that believe it. You know, they go, oh, okay, well, you know, I've seen it. I saw it on the internet. I saw so-and-so, you know, sitting in the back of the car. And they believe it. And they're like, oh, yeah, the car will drive itself. And I'm like, no, guys, it has ability, but you can't just sit in the back and let it drive itself.
That is
completely foolish and dangerous, you know.
Yeah, I covered one of the sort of the pivotal moments in this sort of journey. I wrote a big cover story for the Institute of the Motor Industry magazine in 2018, I think, called Autonomous Now. And there had just been the first UK case. So someone had jumped in the back and was driving down the M1, I think, and had been pulled. And it's the sort of the first time that had come to a British court. And it just incredibly dangerous. I what I would say is, if you've got a car, then you are driving. You've got to take full responsibility, even if you have some of these sort of very, very helpful driver assistance or park assist things. You're driving. It's ultimately your responsibility until the government and all of the industry bodies and the manufacturers tell you explicitly that you're not.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And it's interesting because you've just brought up, obviously, a court case, and you're referring to legislation. And I think I think it's going to be absolutely fascinating in terms of how they legislate for these cars.
Yes.
Because there are so many conundrums, if you like, around these things. Because ultimately, if something happens, who's responsible? You know, how does that work? How would insurance work? How would, you know, laying of blame work? You know, there is this, I'm sure you've heard of it, the thing that's called the trolley problem.
Oh, you know, yes,
this
indeed.
This moral dilemma.
Yeah.
Would you like to explain to the audience what that is and what the dilemma that
is? Okay, well, let's trolley problem, and then we'll come back, because the good news is that some very, very clever people have done an awful lot of thinking in this country particularly about how it's all going to work. So we'll come to that in a moment. The trolley problem is basically a who do you save in a no-win crash scenario? What do you do, and what is the processes behind that? So there was we run a thread on Cars of the Future that I call Hyperbolic Headlines. And one of my favorite ones is one by Jeremy Clarkson in The Sun, where he said something along the lines of driverless cars have got built-in instructions to kill you or something like that. And he's very good at what he does, Jeremy, and he certainly gets attention. But that is pretty much the trolley problem, is what he's talking about. For me, it comes down to, what are you comparing it to? So sometimes I have been in no-win crash situations, and it's horrific, and you have to make a decision about what's going to happen. Yeah, the trolley problem. Someone once said to me, the best solution to the trolley problem is really good brakes. And I think I think there's a lot of truth in that. And then you come into slightly more ethical discussions about, what are you comparing it to, the capabilities of the average human driver against what this new tech is capable of. But especially, I'd sort
I think,
of...
I think if I can interject... I think if I can interject, I think the ultimate issue with the moral dilemma, so to speak, of the trolley problem is like you said, what are you comparing it to? And I think you hit the nail on the head, because the natural human instinct is self-survival. Mm-hmm. You know, the human instinct is like, I've got to save me. Yeah. And I think that the problem, the issue regarding the trolley problem and the autonomous cars is that what is the decision that they would make? Because they could look at a situation where their driver, let's say, is an elderly man, you know, and they're looking ahead and there's kids there, and they go, well, the kids have got their entire life ahead of them. There's three kids compared to one driver. What's the decision that the AI would make? Yeah. I remember, I don't know if this is still the case, but I think a couple of years ago, I remember reading something about Mercedes saying that the Mercedes would always save its owner or its passenger. You know,
that's how it would work. Well, this sort of leaked out, didn't it? And it caused huge controversy. I'm sure whoever happened to speak to the journalist, it was at one of the European motor shows. I forget which. Yeah. And I think it was not only obviously wrong and bad PR and all that sort of thing, but I think it's inaccurate and it doesn't correctly reflect the, if you want to make it, the decision making process and the capabilities and the applications that are going to kick in situations like you find these things. There is no doubt, and we're seeing it with ADAS, and once self-driving gets going, it'll get even better. It'll dramatically reduce the number of road deaths. So currently 1.3 million road deaths globally every year. It's huge, and many, many more serious accidents and injuries. So you do have to come back to what are you comparing it to? And I think that a lot of the manufacturers are now signed up to not only the net zero, but the zero fatalities as well, as sort of part of the Vision Zero package. And I think you will see huge progress on that over the next 25 years. I don't want to conflate driver assistance and full self-driving, but as soon as you have forward-facing and rear-facing and side-facing perception, you will see dramatic improvements in road safety.
But going back to the legislation and how we deal with it, because I know this is a question that often comes up with people when we talk about autonomous cars. It's like, where is the blame? So even today, for example, we have cars that can park themselves. Yep. So you could literally be standing outside the car and you go, right, park yourself. Yep. So if that car then accidentally drives into a parked car,
yes,
then whose fault is that? How does that work?
Right. Okay. So, at the moment, it would be on the driver's insurance, because they are responsible for driving the car. Let's rewind slightly. And you talked about how's all this going to work. The good news is there was a 3-4 year project by the Law Commissions of England and Wales and the Law Commission of Scotland into all of these questions of liability. And it was the first time, we started with Doctor Who. So it was the first time, I think it's Nicholas Payne's QC was head of the Law Commission, was work on this. And he said it's the first time that the Law Commission has ever been asked to look at something that doesn't exist yet. And I think that's astonishing. I think you will look back in 100 years' time and say, like, that's incredible. Like, we are actually starting to legislate now for AI and for technologies that aren't here yet. And they've answered a lot of the questions. So there, once we get to full self-driving, you will have, there are different categories of driver. For the first time since we'd started driving. So there is something called a user in charge. So you sit somewhere between the responsibilities of being a driver and being a passenger. And then there are all sorts of regulations around the operators of these vehicles. So this has got, there's going to be a really important role for fleet operators in the liability. And the insurance industry is working really, really closely with the autonomous industry and with vehicle manufacturers to make sure that there are, the liability is clear.
That's extraordinary. Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely fascinating that we're legislating for something that doesn't exist yet. But
yeah, incredible.
I think that's something that in the wider context of AI, and honestly, Neil, I'm absolutely fascinated by this stuff. And I've been listening to podcasts by people like Mustafa Suleiman and stuff like that, you know. And I think that, you know, they are already talking about we've got to address containment. We've got to address like how we're going to control these things in the future.
Yeah.
And that's even before they've got to that level. But bringing it back to cars, so realistically, so again, I started earlier by saying, you know, I didn't think that realistically cars that drove themselves were going to be here for another decade at least. But where do you think it is now in terms of actual cars that will, that you could literally say, right, come and pick me up and take me to wherever?
Yeah. Okay. So, well, that is sort of getting into the shared mobility model as well. The come and pick me up.
Yeah.
So let's get away from individual car ownership for a moment and start talking about those sorts of fleets. So in, well, as someone you might have heard just drove past very, very quickly on a motorbike, yeah. I think on a 40 yeah. mile an hour road outside. So how safe is that? right. In America, they've had robo-taxi fleets in California, yeah. especially. So likes of Waymo and Cruise. And the Americans have been much more sort of freewheeling in their approach to letting this happen. And I don't want to go too much into it, but Cruise had their license pulled a couple of weeks ago. And so they are now back to, but they're still allowed to test, but with a safety driver. So right. Following an incident in which a human-driven car in a hit and run ran someone over, and then that pedestrian was then in a subsequent incident with the Cruise car, and this led to them having their permit suspended. But this leaves them back to safety driver, which is exactly where we are in the UK. And at the moment, I think that is the right level. And it is almost the regulation is the block now, where right, the technology is almost there. But give it another 18 months, maybe, and if we get legalization. And then the technology is really, really there. I think you will start to see it. And CAF4TH already exists. They're in, so where are we? The end of 2023. So last year, 2022, there was a company called Oxa ran Europe's first zero occupancy road trial of self-driving in Oxford. And it didn't even look like a car. It was basically like sort of a skateboard with a pylon on top with all sorts of sensors. And that is an indicator of the way things are starting to go, I think, just of the capability. And then there are all these converging automotive megatrends. So clean fuel, certainly, higher levels of automation. And then you start combining that with mobility as a service, and shared mobility, that kind of thing. And if you could say, I'd like a car to come to my door and take me to wherever, and you're on your smartphone, and you can reliably start to trust that it's going to happen, and it'll be there within minutes, and it'll provide a good service, then the implications for private car ownership are considerable, I think, at that point.
I think, you know, absolutely. I mean, we're racing ahead now. But just, I mean, just again, one thing that struck me there, because you said 18 months. So we are talking about cars, effectively autonomous cars, sometime in the middle of 2025, which really isn't that far away.
Right. Well, I will pin my colors to the mast. I based on the fact that these things already exist, they're already being tested. So you have CAV4TH and you have the... There was a big DfT initiative called the Great Self-Driving Exploration. So I will give a shout out to our consumer champion at the Self-Driving Industry Awards, which was Rebecca Posner of CCAV, which is sort of the sub bit of the DfT that deals with autonomous. And she ran this program called the Great Self-Driving Exploration, in which they took self-driving pods and larger vehicles to parts of the UK where there hadn't been much debate about them, like sort of Taunton, places like that was one of them, Olnick Castle. And people are getting in and reporting feedback on going in these vehicles, and they're operating in what would be considered really challenging circumstances. So the tech is really nearly there. How quickly it rolls out into general usage is a really, really interesting question. It's not a great analogy, but it's informative, I think. If you'd have told me when I was younger that I could fit my entire music collection on something the size of a single tape, that would have absolutely blown my mind. And yet, here we are, and I'm 47 years old, and that has happened. And actually, within that, it went iPods, and then within a few years, that wasn't good enough, so it was already integrated into smartphones, which are basically just sort of mini computers in your pockets that do all sorts of things. And we've seen that. That's happened. I know, I'm sort of the last generation that remembers the time before the internet, certainly, as in common usage. and it has come in so quickly and is now so embedded in all areas of our life. And I suspect that once connected and automated vehicle technology gets rolling, then it will come in really quickly because of the so many benefits, because of the safety benefits, because of providing mobility for people that can't drive, freeing up huge amounts of time not driving. And I love driving, but sometimes if you've got a stack of work to do and you've got to drive somewhere and it's 5 hours away, like I take trains sometimes, I get tons of work done on the train. Yeah. And those sorts of efficiencies come to vehicles as well.
I can
rant about the costs as well. Cars are bloody expensive, right?
They
depreciate as soon as you drive them off the forecourt. So you've got to look at the business case as well. If there is a better,
I mean, you really are opening a whole Pandora's box here.
Yep, sorry.
and you know, you hark back to the past, and of course, you know, I just turned 55, so you know, and I can, you know, thinking back to cassettes and things like that, and cars, and you know, at my age, being the first to get a car and get driving, get my license, you know, buy an old crappy Cortina from a bloke down the market, and off we went, you know.
This is why you're a Pertwee man.
Sorry.
This is why you're a Pertwee man, you see. It's all about era, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. That's exactly. Back to the 70s. 79, that car was, actually. But this is the thing. It's like the rate of progress, like even, like I said, you know, in our lifetimes, what we've seen and how quickly we've adapted to it. You know, like, you know, even with the phones and stuff. And like, we get these phones that can do incredible things, and then we're like, oh, but it's not quick enough. You know, it's like, it's how quickly we adapt and then demand more. It's quite extraordinary. But yeah. Going back to, you know, I mean, you're a car guy, you're a car journalist. You said you love classic cars.
Yeah.
But you're fundamentally, like I said, you've opened the Pandora's box, and now you're talking about an era where, you know, cars, we don't own cars. And if we don't own cars, then car brands don't stand for anything. Then that entirely, radically, completely changes the industry that we love.
Yeah. So, the car manufacturers are very, very aware of this. I ran the sort of autonomous stage at this big MOVE event at the Excel Centre in London. Happens every year. It's really good, and it covers autonomous but clean fuel, basically cutting edge mobility tech. And we had Marcus Veltz of Hyundai, and he's their sort of smart cities guy. And he said that they, within Hyundai, they encourage people, their own staff, to use multimodal transport, which I thought is just so progressive, so forward thinking. So look, the vehicle manufacturers, and you could see it with Nissan as well, who are involved in a lot of the projects that in this country as well. There's very exciting projects up in Newcastle. Is a big one. So the some. More than others, but yeah, some vehicle manufacturers are really on top of this.
But it's something that they must really be grappling with, because, like I said, the erosion of brand identity. I mean, already, Neil, we're in an era where, you know, like I said, you know, I've been doing this a while, and I remember when, before, say 15, 20 years ago, as a car reviewer, you could say, this is a good car, this is an okay car, and that's a really bad car, you know.
Yeah.
Nowadays, there is no such thing as a bad car.
No,
there's barely any okay cars.
Completely
all good cars. Yeah. You know? Yeah. So the only thing that's actually left, I mean, if you go, everything is great. Even the stuff like coming from China and stuff, the cars are amazing right now, you know. And I remember just, you know, when I was back in Dubai, and this must have been maybe 2008, 2009, and we had the first Chinese car come in, and I was running Car Middle East magazine. We had the first Chinese car, my deputy editor got it. And I said, well, give me the keys, you know, I better just go down and have a look at it and take it around the block, whatever. And I remember going downstairs, opening the door, and then just closing it again, going, this is a piece of junk. You know, I'm not going to get into this. You know, it was that bad. And to go from there to where we are now, where the cars are truly world class, is extraordinary. But then the only thing that you have left to differentiate these brands, these cars, is the brand. And then if you end up in a position where, you know, we're not even buying the cars, and surely we're going to see an erosion of all of our beloved brands that that currently exist in the car industry.
It is a possibility. Well, yeah, how to tackle that one? It is a big question. And you are comparing sort of what exists today to what is going to exist in a few times. And actually, things change dramatically. So I think we started at the start. So we've got Doctor Who is 60, and with the Kinks of 60.
Yeah.
And then it is apparently 30 years since the Chemical Brothers. So I'm not sure how many people now, we're 30 years down the line. I'm not sure my kids particularly familiar with the Chemical Brothers, let alone the Kinks. They've got their own stuff. Things shift very quickly.
They do shift, they do adapt. But at the same time, I do feel that there's a human need to possess things. Mm. You know, there's a human requirement that part of us, you know, yes. I mean, I think that, you know, where it's going to be like it is at the moment. You know, like if we live in big urban cities, then we're quite happy to use public transport. I mean, I own a car, but if I go into London, I'm always on the tube. I'm always on the bus. I never drive into London.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're out in the countryside or something, even to go to the shops or whatever, you'll need your car. You need a vehicle that's right there all the time, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that I still feel that there will be that sort of split where there will be a level of car sharing, but there will still be a level of people saying, no, this possession belongs to me, at least for whatever duration.
I suspect that before too long, you may end up with that at the very high end. So very, very expensive, very luxurious vehicles specced out to a billionaire's preferences that will still have all the capabilities to join a connected and autonomous network. That might well, in terms of private car ownership, I think that is a strong possibility. But for the vast majority of people who just want to get from A to B effectively, then there will be better options.
Yeah, it's incredible. You saw the BMW, was it the iVision that they introduced a while back, the concept, you know?
Was that the color changing one?
And they actually had Arnold Schwarzenegger do an entire sort of, you know, interaction with it and stuff like that. And
okay, here we are. It takes so long, but that in any discussion about self-driving, you eventually end up at Arnold Schwarzenegger and
But also what I was going to say, in one of the promo videos for that car, the Hoff appeared with Knight Rider.
And
I think that was a really clever link that they created there, because on the one hand, it's like really unusual for a manufacturer to have another manufacturer's product in their promo video.
But
at the same time, I thought about what they're doing here. And what they were doing is that they were going hard onto the nostalgia thing. With all of us that grew up wanting a car that we could talk to, this is what they were doing, right?
Yeah. But I'm full of praise for Knight Rider, because actually it was incredibly prescient. A lot of the big discussions they had. I think, look, we can geek out here. So Kit had a sort of a nemesis, which was an earlier prototype called Car.
That's right, Car.
He was a nasty piece of work. He really was. Yes. And so they were exploring all of these issues. But there is definitely a perception challenge that sort of the new self-driving ecosystem has to tackle to reassure people about the safety and about the benefits. And it involves discussions about AI and its role in the world, which we're seeing in all industries. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. So let's move on a little bit and let's talk about how these cars are going to be powered. At the moment, we're pretty much on this EV sort of bandwagon.
Yep.
You know, which I think, you know, is definitely part of the future.
Yep.
But from my point of view, and I'll let you explore this. From my point of view, I think that EV is probably one aspect of where the future power is going to come from.
Yeah.
And I think that actually, I feel that we're going to need multiple solutions because the requirements are so varied, you know. And I think in the future, it's going to be even more complex. So, what's your thinking of how cars or vehicles, shall we say, of the future are going to be powered?
Right. Well, this is a question that I get all the time. So, Neil Kennett, your editor of Cars of the Future, electric cars, right? It's like, not really. No, more into self-driving, and we've done a lot on that. And I find it astonishing that we're still talking about EVs as new technology. And we've come a long way in the last 20 years. And again, you have to take your hat off to Elon Musk and Tesla, because nobody else was building, certainly for the mass market, a battery-powered electric vehicle. And then within 20 years, Tesla is the most valuable car brand on the planet. So that's how quickly things can change. Actually, look, I like all car tech, but in terms of how it's powered and which way it's going to go, so long as it's clean, don't really care. Yeah. I'm more interested in the self-driving side, but let's talk about some of the possibilities. So battery electric is the leading contender at the moment. I recently did a piece for the IMI on this, looking at three sort of main contenders. So we looked at battery electric, and there's been, we're not as far ahead with the infrastructure as you might like, but I think in the last 12 months, I think there's like a 40% increase in the number of charging points. So that's massive, and it's getting there now. I think the pushing the deadline for sales of new petrol and diesel back to 35 is a bit of a retrograde step, but 5 years, give or take, considering everything else that's going on, when you look back on it historically, I don't actually think that's going to be such a big deal. But battery is pushing ahead. Battery technology is advancing so fast, and the capacity to store energy is just incredible. And they're even talking about sort of growing some of the components. So the sustainability, that's pretty mind blowing stuff.
Wow.
What else is there? So biofuels, if you're a fan of a combustion engine, biofuels is interesting, certainly as a sort of medium-term bridging technology. I know the petrol and diesel that we use, if you still run a petrol car, which, look, I'll come clean, this is how much of a I love drive. What I actually drive is a sort of getting on for 10 years old Suzuki Swift petrol engine, manual gearbox. That's my dad's favorite.
That is a fun little car. People don't know how much fun that car is.
Oh,
drive.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
really is a cool little thing.
Yeah, love it. Love it. And so the petrol that I chuck into that is 10% biofuel. Because it has to be. So that is already being introduced, and that is only going to increase. There are some questions about how clean it is, because a lot of it in this country is palm, and that's bad, basically. And again, it's just another bit of a misstep. But once we sort all this stuff out, that will just be a footnote, I think, again. And the other one that gets a lot of attention is hydrogen. JCB have built this amazing hydrogen combustion engine. Toyota quite big on hydrogen as well. There are I take your point that there can be to different use cases and stuff like that. Elon Musk, as you expect, is absolutely dismissive of hydrogen. Says that doesn't occur naturally on Earth, which is quite interesting. Says that it's the worst possible solution in terms of battery storage. There is an argument that it, and in order to get hydrogen, you basically have to involves electrolysis, which is incredibly dependent on power. You've got to put a lot in to get some out. So there is an argument that in South America, for instance, if you've got so much clean energy that you can do what you want with it, then you can put some of that into electrolysis to get you the hydrogen. And in some applications, that might be better. But if you do all that, if it's that good, then why don't you just use battery electric? which is, I think, which I think is probably the way it's going to go. There's some studies about how quickly you get to sort of really high levels of sustainability within the next 15 or 20 years. And battery electric delivers miles, much, much higher percentages, pushing towards sort of the 90% clean within quite a short time scale. So that's really compelling. The other, there is an outrider that's always worth keeping an eye on, which is solar, which nobody tends to talk about very much these days. Some of those, actually, I'm more interested in talking about the self-driving stuff. It's all fascinating, but as long as it's clean, I don't really care.
It's true. It is an important part of the conversation, obviously.
It's got to be clean.
And again, harking back to the fathers, if you like, of AI, and again listening to that podcast with Mustafa Suleiman, and he was saying that
I will check. I'm not familiar with it. I will check it out.
You need to check him out. You need to check him out. He's incredible. He's the guy. What's it? DeepMind, I think. DeepMind is the one that he created. Okay. And he's just listening to him is. I think he's got a book out. I'm thinking of getting it because it's just his insights are just amazing. And he was actually openly talking about the era of the age of abundance, because he was of the belief that AI will help us sort out. He said, look, energy is in abundance because we have the sun. Well, the problem that we have is how to capture and how to store. This is the main issue that we have. And he was of the belief that AI will lead us in that direction. We'll figure out how we can make these things more efficient. And he said, once we've done that, then we're in the era of age of abundance, because then energy is freely available. Wow. So that's kind of where he was going with that,
which is a really
wonderful thing to hope for.
I'm committing myself, really pinning some colours to the mast here. So I love science fiction, but if I had to choose, I'd go Star Trek over Star Wars, because Star Trek has got so much about how technology actually works in proper societies, and people dedicate their times to public service and civil duty and things like that are really important. Whereas Star Wars tends to just come down to getting a lightsaber out, which is all very cool. Those sorts of questions. Once we solve these things.
I am so totally with you. I could so geek out with you over Star Trek. It's unbelievable, honestly. Because I love all science fiction. I love Star Wars, you know.
But
the reality is that Star Trek, for me, was brilliant because Star Trek envisions the future.
Yes.
Where humanity worked to solve all the problems. When you hear people like this guy talking about the age of abundance, you go, actually, that's taking us closer to the future that Star Trek actually envisions. Because Star Trek does envision a future where we have everything we need. So what's left? What's left is then space exploration, or pushing the human mind, or pushing creativity, you know, and doing the things that we really want to do, you know?
So let's
bring it back to cars again.
Let's briefly, because we're talking about alternative fuel. We had at the Self-Driving Industry Awards, I was really keen to have a strong sustainability angle to it. And one of the most difficult decision. We talked for ages about whether we should have a sustainability award. And in the end, we decided that we shouldn't, because it's 2023 and sustainability should be built into everything that all of us are doing all of the time, because the climate crisis is absolutely huge. I mean, we're now talking about sort of 3% planet warming, and the implications are massive. And we're going to need technology, I think, to dig us out of this hole.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. Absolutely agree with that. Totally agree with that. So moving back to cars, I think you touched a little bit on what you thought the cars of the future would look like, which was basically pods.
Oh, well, yeah, different use cases. Okay, yeah. Yeah, so what will they look like? The first thing to say is that it's a massive change in terms of vehicle design, because ever since I'm going back to the horse and cart, that's basically where it came from. So you've got someone holding the reins, and then we sort of swap that out for someone with a thing like a rudder from a ship, and then we got a steering wheel. So for the first time since we've been doing this type of stuff, the design of the vehicle does not have to start with the human that's driving it. So from a design point of view, that incredibly liberating, I think, and there's going to be some really great vehicle designs of all different sorts. So again, I point you to, I think, the sort of the skateboard approach. Applied EV were one of our winners at the awards. Worked with Oxa on the skateboard platform, and then you build whatever you need on top of it, whether it's for industrial applications or whether it's for freight, and then is it long distance or is it last mile? And then you have people, movement of people. There's a really a design winner, so that's probably a good place to start, at the Self-Driving Industry Awards, was a company called Dromos. And they are sort of little two or three people pods, but more than that, they operate on their own infrastructure. So you've got sort of eco-friendly, dedicated lanes, effectively, which can have trees. It all uses sustainable products and all that sort of thing. But you could actually end up with sort of carbon benefits if you create these things in the right way. And you have lots of these little vehicles. So one of the things people often ask about is, you don't want to be locked in a self-driving vehicle with a mad psychopath. That's a pretty bad thing to happen. So smaller, almost individual use pods, I think there's a strong argument there. The Dromos solutions are absolutely fantastic. But then you come back to the overall winner, which was the bus, the Cavforth bus. Yeah. And it was the best example we've got, I think, of the self-driving technology. But actually, if you follow the sort of the transport management implications, you could still have these big vehicles that are only half full on a good day.
Yeah.
And that's not very efficient. So I think you probably do, in most cases, end up with smaller things. I think certainly they initially they have sort of their own architecture and their own lanes and that sort of thing. Designed a lot more focus on the interior, so making it really, really comfortable and for passengers. Another favorite quote on design. So Daniel Ruiz, who used to be head of Zenzic, which is the UK body that sort of pushes self-driving, said to me that you'll see a lot of the benefits of self-driving in freight first, because freight doesn't care how quickly it goes around corners. I quite like that. Yeah. I think that's quite astute. And then the exterior design, because you have to incorporate all of the sensors. So you have perception sensors, so radar, LiDAR, cameras, all that sort of thing has to be fitted into the vehicle. And I think vehicle design is going to be absolutely fascinating over the next 10 years. I think you'll see some really dramatic changes.
Yeah, no, I actually totally agree with you. And I think that it's going to be quite a broad spectrum from, like you say, the pods. But also, I think I remember, you probably know them, but I know there's at least one or two companies that are looking at the pods that would actually come together. So again, the efficiency of a bus. Like I said, rather than having an half-empty bus, pods will then just come and join. They're all going in the same direction and then separate.
Platooning. So for smaller... Let's talk about small pods. Probably is a thing. So they form into a train, and then they sort of go off to do their own things when as people need. Freight platooning is often quoted, especially a few years ago, as like one of the first benefits. And this really does come down to geography. So a company called Kodiak in America doing some great stuff with like 40-ton trucks. But yeah. In this country, National Highways did a big study into platooning on the M6. And they found that actually they didn't get the efficiencies that they thought they would, because we're such a small country, and you lose the platoon when you come to junctions. And so you can see platooning being really, really useful in Australia, say, where you've got a long outback road, huge benefits. But in the UK, that's a more interesting one, I think.
The other thing that I think design, like I said, I see a spectrum, and that's sort of one aspect of it, and then the pods and what have you. But on the other side, I've said this before, I envisage a return to coach building, because as you said earlier, we have a scenario where we now have a skateboard platform, and we can build anything we like on that. You know, And I'm actually personally quite disappointed with the designs that, and I said this to, I was at the Nissan design thing here in London, and I put it to the designers there a little bit, and I said, look, I'm not seeing the really, really pushing design, because now that you have the skateboard platform, surely you can be much more radical. Yeah. And I think part of it came down to acceptability. It's like what we recognize and accept as a vehicle. Yeah. You know? And I think that they're just waiting for that to develop and evolve further before they can really sort of push that.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it Zero they unveiled recently as part of the 25th anniversary of Nissan Design Center, I think. But you look at what they've done in that time, like that Qashqai and stuff like that. Really moved it along. But at the moment, the traditional vehicle manufacturers have still, of course, got to build the whole design around the driver. So that is limiting. But once you start progressing beyond that, then all sorts of other possibilities emerge.
It's exciting. So final question, why don't we have flying cars yet?
Oh, the flying car. Yeah. Did we start with the TARDIS? I think we did, didn't we? So
we start with the TARDIS. We can end with the Back to the Future DeLorean, if you like.
Right. Yeah. Flying car. This comes
down. We were promised, Neil. When I was a kid, we were promised. You know?
Well, in that case, I've got really, really good news for you. So it comes down, what do you define as a car? And we looked at this question quite deeply when myself and some of the other judging panel, Corey Clothier in America, superb for his international expertise. And UK entrepreneur, actually more tourism based, so he's more interested in the consumer experience layer, Alex Bainbridge of Atora. And Alex drew my attention to do you know a company called Ehang, a Chinese company, but they did there's brilliant stuff on YouTube. Have a quick look on that. They did a test in Spain recently where it's basically like a sort of passenger carrying drone, I suppose, is a way to explain it. So what do you count as?
They call them eVTOL, don't they? I think there's been trials in Dubai as well. Electric vehicle, vertical takeoff vehicle, I think something like that.
Yeah. Indeed. So the Ehang one, I think, has just got one of its first airworthiness certifications. So the crossover from self-driving vehicles into what's a self-driving vehicle, what's a drone, what's a pavement delivery robot, all of these things. But I think if you're saying it's whatever happened to flying cars, go and Google Ehang, and I think you'll find that's pretty close.
Okay. That's awesome. Well, I think that there's loads of crazy stuff coming. I don't know if I would get into a driverless eVTOL drone at the moment. I'm not sure if I would do that. As keen as I am on science fiction, as much as I love to embrace the future, I'm not sure I could do that. But anyway,
I should give a quick shout out. There's a Professor Siddhartha Castagir, Warwick, has done an amazing piece of work on automation in different areas of transport and how you can bring all that together. So starting with self-driving cars, but what other industries? So what marine and what aviation and what we can all learn from each other. I think that that's a really, really important piece of work.
It's exciting stuff. I mean, yeah, I'll look it up. But I mean, I think that, you know, there is. So, I mean, this conversation, I mean, you know, we're running out the clock, but this conversation just could go on and on and on because there is just so many aspects to where we're going.
Yeah.
And we're going quickly.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Maybe we'll catch up in another, in a part two, perhaps, or something. You know, let's, you know, those people listening and watching, let us know if you want us to do this again, you know.
I would absolutely love to. Could we just, for my my own interest, at the end, so brown car guy, and I presume that this is sort of a reflection on maybe the lack of popularity of brown cars, shall we say, and the impact on the... The impact on the resale value.
And in fact, my car, people are like, okay, do you have a brown car? I'm like, no, my car is black.
Yeah, which shows up dirt terribly, doesn't it? Black.
I know. I was actually, you say that because I've got the classic 89 BMW and I took it yesterday over to the Ace Cafe, day before, I think, and to meet this 650,000 euro Zyrus Lamborghini Huracan with 1,000 brake horsepower. And there was a photographer there, and I would park them side by side just for the heck of it, you know.
Yeah.
And he started taking pictures, and sort of instinctively, I went around the back and grabbed a rag from the boot and started cleaning it because I was like, so you just like, oh, it's not quite clean, you know. But you end up doing that, right? But no, the brown car guy is basically it's about my identity. So it's pretty much saying that I'm brown and I'm a car guy, and. We talked earlier about, you know, you quite rightly mentioned about the fact that, you know, the future is how we all come together and work together and look at the future and look at all these questions that we're now faced with and try to find all the solutions that inevitably are going to come. But the way they're going to come best, and again, harking back to Star Trek, is the fact that people working together and coming together and being able to do that and to celebrate that ability, I think, for me, has always been uppermost and foremost. And I think that when I created Brown Car Guy, which is now coming up to 5 years now, this brand, the idea was to actually celebrate that and to sort of double down on it and go, right, you know what, it's not just about one community or another community. It's that we're all in this together, whether we're brown or black or whatever culture, religion, wherever we are in the world, it doesn't matter because we're all going into the future together. And if we don't cooperate and work together, then I think, you know, again, geeking out, but Gene Roddenberry, quote, founder of creator of Star Trek, he said, look, and I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember exactly, but he said, look, if we can't learn to get on here together on this planet, then we've got no right to go out into space because of the infinite diversity that we're inevitably going to find out there. So I think that, you know, it's a play on that, really.
Right.
But also,
I absolutely I will try and get the fingers working. Do they go sort of like that? And you say, live long and prosper.
That's it.
Is that
live
a good
long
end?
And prosper. That's it. Perfect. Awesome, Neil. Thanks so much for doing this, and we'll catch up again soon.
Thank
I'm sure.
So much. Amazing. Thank you. A brown car guy.
Hope you enjoyed that video. If you did, please hit the like button and share this video as well if you can. And while you're at it, check out these guys who also sponsor my content. I am deeply grateful to them because it helps me to buy new equipment, put fuel in the cars, and yes, buy a cup of coffee. You can do the same. Just go here or right here on YouTube. Just hit these three little dots down here and click on thanks. Make sure you're signed in first. My content is free. But this is how you can help me keep it that way. I may even send you a gift. Oh, by the way, watch this next.